and welcome to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board. Now, what I want to do today is I want to talk about the most exciting strategy for 2013. This is a strategy that is making my students literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it is totally untapped. You can do it anywhere around Australia, and it is a strategy that doesn't rely on boom towns, doesn't rely on anything except your own education. So have a listen to this. This is a strategy that is it is just so important for 2013 for anybody who really needs to do some quick turnover deals, who needs to be building equity, that needs a chunk machine on the side to be able to take those chunks of money and put out there into positive cash flow properties, because that's the name of the game. You know, positive cash flow properties and getting properties that you can build passive income from, so that when you're ready, you can pull the pin on a job, you can go sailing, you can do whatever you want to go and do, because time is your own. You know, you've got those choices. But obviously, to be able to get to that point in time, you need an entry point. You need some money to be able to get into these deals that are positive cash flow. So the strategy that I want to talk about today is a strategy that will provide that cash for you. And it's also a fabulous strategy to be able to start with when you even haven't got any money. That's the great thing about it. This strategy you can start to implement regardless of what stage you're at. And then I was talking to some of my students today, and there were a couple of my platinum students, and I was talking about, you know, deals that they were going to do, and we were setting out a plan for 2013 and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, in a couple of cases, they were after income replacement. You know, some wanted to go and have babies, and some wanted to be able to, you know, to help their parents and change jobs out of a job that they didn't like, and all sorts of things came up. Some just wanted time out. But the underlying thing was, you need to be able to continue to invest. You need to be able to create enough momentum to be able to buy enough positive cash flow properties to do exactly that. And going buying one deal, even if it's positive cash flow, if it doesn't set you up to go and buy the next one, then it's probably not the right deal for you. So what I want to do today is talk about two strategies. One, which is a little bit of a a financing side of things, and the other one is a strategy that enables you to be able to share the love. Share the love by actually having profits that you share with the existing owners of a property. So how does that sound? That's what we're going to be talking about. Now, to help me out today, well, I've actually got one of my star students here who comes along to help me out quite a lot. Ian Ugarte, are you there, Ian?
I am here. Hello, everyone. How are you all going?
I'm sure no they're answers. Doing fabulously. So, Ian, let's talk about vendor financing and vendor JVs or seller JVs. And it's a seller JV one that I'm actually the most excited about. So as we step through this, this next presentation, let's talk about some of your deals, some of my deals, and some of the biggest opportunities that we actually see as the year rolls out, because there is literally these deals on every corner. And it's the type of thing that you can really make happen regardless of what stage you're at. I was even talking to another student last week, and he was in a situation where he had plenty of money, plenty of equity and things like that. But I still talked to him about doing seller JVs particularly, because what it did is it gave him the opportunity to make more money out of a deal. Even though he had the capacity to actually buy the deal, it was better for him to actually do it as a seller JV because he didn't have the holding costs. And I know you've had one of those in your past as well, Ian.
Yeah, we're constantly looking at these types of deals. And as always, for me, Christine and myself, we've always got three or four on the back end, on the table, just sitting there, and we're going backwards and forwards. And the beauty about this is that there's no finance application, there's no bits and pieces. There's no holding costs, there's no stamp duty, there's a lot of positives by doing this sort of deal. Because if you are doing just a flip deal where you're buying in and then selling off, It's really the only person that's going to benefit generally is the tax department out of all of that.
And the lawyers.
And the lawyers.
And, and then the stamp duties office.
Yes, that's right. And
all
so,
the people you want to make money out of.
Yeah, and when you look at some of these deals and you put those costs in, if you've done a reasonable feasibility, you're going to see that it's actually not a good deal to do as a buy, redo and sell off in that sort of strategy. But when you find that you're actually buying into it and you're not having to pay all those extra duties, that there's good profit in the deal.
That's right. So let's have a look at this. We'll start with the easy one, easy for some, is vendor financing rather than the seller JVs. And we'll save the good stuff till last, yeah?
Yeah. And for us, what we do is we look for certain deals and we're always looking for painting the picture. And it's vendor JVs, seller JVs, anything to do with a joint venture partner that's a vendor is that they have to be in a position to be able to do that for you. So there's no use going to a vendor that only owns one property and is selling that property to be able to buy another one, whether it be an upgrade or whatever, because it's obvious that they're going to need that money in the next deal. You need to paint the picture and see what type of person it is and whether they have the resources and ability to be able to finance you into the deal.
Now, this kind of research and is, you know, people going, well, how do I find out that kind of information? I'd like you to talk about your 13-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she's obviously sat in a lot of my seminars now and she's taken it on board to get what she wants. Just paint the picture a little bit about your 13-year-old daughter wanting certain things.
Yeah, when my daughter wants something, she'll do whatever it needs to be done to get it.
Whatever
and,
it takes.
And I'm not sure where she gets that from, but so we were looking for a PPR a little while back, and she found one on the internet. And she says, I really like this one, Dad. I said, well, at the moment, we've tied our money up into other deals. So we've got two choices. We either rent or we find a vendor JV. And she said, well, what's that about? And I explained what had to happen. And I said to her, you're going to have to find the story there. Do they own more than one property? And if they do, what is it? And we need to find out information. So she got on the internet and started and found, using Investara and a few other tools, found out who owned the property, found out what other properties they owned. She came back and she said to me, well, Dad, she's an entrepreneur, which is another word for an entrepreneur. And she's in business with her mother and her brother, and they own a garage door business, and it's at this such address, and she owns another property which is on the market as well, and this is the property. And so she came back with a lot of information. They were somehow tied up in a pineapple farm as well, and there was so much information that she could find just by Googling names and addresses. And from
and
that, Facebook and Twitter and all that sort of stuff, there is so much information about us out there that you don't know. I was at a seminar the other day and someone put a photo up of me, Christine and I, and I don't know where they got it because it's only ever on our computer, so it's up there somewhere. So so she painted the picture. She basically found out all the information, and she's only 13. It doesn't take much to be able to get that.
So she found a seller that was in a position where they didn't need the money, all of the money, to move on to another deal. They were able to, you know, they had both properties for sale, so something had to sell. She did searches on the property and worked out, you know, with mortgages and rough values and things like that, and then was able to use that information to say, well, you know, this person's probably in a position to be able to leave some money in the deal, because that's what you were looking at this time. You were actually saying, leave the money in the deal so we can borrow some from the bank, but we haven't got all the deposit because we've got our money tied up elsewhere. And you could then, you know, buy that property, and in this case, it was a PBR.
Yeah, that's right. Before I left full time salary, we made sure we had portable loans. So we've got portable loans available to be able to use
and move on.
And we had one of those available right now.
Okay. So how do you go through that process? What do you do?
So generally, the first starting point is making contact with the agent and speaking to them about them. Find out from the agent why the vendors are selling, you know, is it an investment property, all that sort of stuff. Are they bridging finance? Are they really hurting at the moment and paying big interest rates because they've moved on to another property? I always like to look if there's a caravan in the driveway or something similar to that, simply because of the fact that if they're an older couple and there's a brand new caravan in the driveway, they're off around Australia and their need for money isn't that great, which means that they'd be happy to vendor finance you into the deal. That meaning that they could sell the property, put their money in the bank and get 3%, what is it nowadays? 2.5 maybe soon.
Not very much.
whereas with the vendor financing, you could offer them, you'd be quite happy to offer them more than what the commercial rates are, and pay them 6%. And you just show them that what 6% is on their money compared to 3% on a monthly or weekly basis while they're travelling around Australia. I like to look at the photos on realestate.com.au. As soon as I see any site like that that has photos of the property that does not have any furniture in it, I know it's a good chance that a vendor finance will happen, because it's either investment property that hasn't got anyone in it, or they've moved on.
Mm.
So you may, as they get older, they may be selling stuff to be able to pay down their debt, and bits and pieces. Is there another story behind the sell? Are they trying to help their kids out? You know, all that. You know, are they going on holidays? Do they have grandchildren they want to help out? Are they travelling bits in different places? Have they invested money? Have they mortgaged their property to invest money in the stock market? And surprise, it hasn't gone that well. All that sort of stuff. So, do they absolutely need to sell? And you're always looking for a property that you can do multiple strategies on. So if it's a property you'd like to be able to develop the block, is there a potential to subdivide? Is there a potential to renovate? And like Dimitar always says, the more strategies you can fit into the deal, the better the outcome is going to be at the end. And all the way along the line, are you building rapport? So I went through a stage early on, pre-Dimitar, where I was upsetting a lot of agents because they were telling me things where I could see through the truth. But I don't do that anymore because it's not in my interest to do that. So I constantly build rapport. I'm always asking the agent third level questions. I know about their life. I know about their hobbies. I know, and it's constantly. And it can almost be annoying. I actually don't let go of, when I'm in a negotiation, I don't let go of it. I always make sure I've got my foot still in the door. And I presume the best analogy would be I'm like one of those Labradors that sort of pushes themselves up against you all the time. They're a little bit annoying, but they're cute at the same time. So so constantly there, and you know they're there, and the agent's always. So it's always about that sort of stuff.
Let me just say here to everybody, go with your strengths. You know, whatever your strength is, whether it be, you know, cute and annoying, like Ian will say, whether it be like my brother, who's an old bushy, and he just plays the old bushy and everybody feels sorry for him, tells him everything and even fills out the forms for him, whether it be in written form. You know, I've got a girlfriend who, she is brilliant with the written word. She writes the most beautiful letters and they're eloquent and her handwriting is gorgeous, and she's won so many deals by actually writing a personal letter to the to the owner of the property. If English isn't your first language, don't worry about it. Just say, hey, listen, English is not my first language. So if I say things a bit funny, you know, just let me know. And immediately then you've got the other guy or the other person on the other side on side. You know, you go with your strengths, what you're good at. And really try and create that intimacy with the whether it be the agent or the seller or the person on the excuse me on the other side of the negotiation, whatever that actually is. So I can hear everybody out there, Ian, going, yeah, well, how do you actually do that? Like, what do you do?
Well, I like to do what they call mind reading, and mind reading, when I say that in the sense of the form from a neuro-linguistic programming or a personality profile, mind reading is not a good thing when you're dealing with people. But in this point here, you're actually trying to put a story together and you have to mind read what's going on. So mind reading is where you get two and two put together and it makes five. You've got to try and make the story fit. So you look at the story from the beginning. Where did they first invest on that property? Where did they did they buy another investment property? Did they revalue their property? And probably, if it's in their own name, did they cross-securitize? And likely that they would have, because that's what a standard investor does. So you can sort of start to see how much money is owing on the original property and every property after that. Is it, again, is it a mum and dad that's just shifting properties? Are they moving from one to the other? Are they possibly keeping the one that they originally in, making that an investment property and buying another one?
Are they downsizing and moving into a retirement village?
Yeah, so you're looking at the previous sales history and the tools that allow you to track the sales. And so we've mentioned Investar here before, and there's a few other tools. Some of the, just domain.com will help you there. There's a On the House, which is, I'm not a fan of On the House myself. It's a free version of information for properties, which is not helpful for us when we're trying to sell a deal, but helpful generally to find stuff. So, and that's what we're trying to do the whole time. I don't ever bypass the agent. I think if you've made a initial consultation with the agent, it's not a good thing to cut them out of the deal. I wouldn't expect that to happen to me in my normal daily business, and so I wouldn't do it to anyone else. So sometimes you can get the agent to quite happily sit around the table. Generally, agents will not like that. They won't want you to, like Dipner's always said from the beginning, they won't like you talking directly to the vendor. But when you're doing that third level questioning and the agent knows who you are, and you know you're the Labrador just pushing up against the side of the leg, they're going to allow you to at some point be able to talk to the vendor. If that doesn't succeed, then just find out who the vendor is and go and knock on the door and do the deal and then go back to the agent.
I remember telling you that a few years ago when a deal was not going the way you wanted it to and you thought it was the agent not relaying the information, and I said, well, go and find out who he is and go and knock on your door.
Yeah.
Just explain what happened with that particular situation.
I tried every component to be able to get across to the agent what I was trying to do. And firstly, it was I dressed myself up. Well, I didn't dress myself up. I came from work in a suit and tie because I was in a management position at the time, and went and spoke to him and let him know about how we were and what we were doing and all the bits and pieces, and that this was our offer, and he came back and said no. And so then I tried it in writing, letting him know that our family really wanted to find a family home because we've been out of a home for a while, and I tried all of that, and in the end you could just see it was going nowhere. And this agent in particular had a history of selling properties poorly. And so,
under market value to his mates.
So so I went and saw it, and I knocked on the door of the vendor, and I said, you've got every right to send me away right now, but I'm interested in buying a property and I'm finding it difficult to communicate with your agent. Have you got an offer? He said, he said there was an offer, but he didn't really want to put it to me because it wasn't worth it. So when I put it to him verbally, it was a different story. Our main thing in that deal there was that we needed an extended settlement because we had another couple of deals that were winding up and had sold, but we were waiting for titles to be released. So we needed an extended settlement. And he says, actually, I prefer an extended settlement because my tenants have been in there for a long time and I want to give them a chance to find another property. So what the agent had told me was that he definitely wouldn't do an extended settlement. And the fact was that he would.
And he actually preferred it.
And he preferred it on top of that.
Yeah.
So
this, like the deal that you did is a resi-mercial. So it was a commercial shop down the bottom with two units on top.
Yeah.
Desperately needed renovation. But with renovation, and this is in Sydney, in a good suburb in Sydney. So with the renovation, you turned this from something that was negatively cash flowed into a great positive cash flow deal.
And a chunk deal at the same time.
Because it increased the value of the property.
Yeah.
So when you're looking for a deal that might be able to be negotiated in another way, you look for things like days on the market. And if it's been sitting around a long time, generally speaking, somebody's going to do a deal.
Yeah. I mean, there's no use. Well, you could be lucky and you could find the right sort of vendor that will do it for you. But if you approach a vendor that's only had their property on the market for 3 months, they're still at the point where they're enthusiastic, quite a possibility that it's going to sell. But when you look at a property like this one here, where it started, they tried to sell it in the middle of 2010, and by after the middle of 2012, oh sorry, by the time we started, this is actually a deal that we had done ourselves, we came in at about middle of 2011. So it'd been on the market for a year and they hadn't sold it, and it was time for us to approach them and say, what can we do here?
So it started at 2.2 back in 2010, June of 2010. And then by September of 2010, they dropped it to just under 2 mil. And it had sat around, changed agents, changed from exclusive for sale to eventually 2012, you got involved and started to get the vendor to come to the party. And this is the type of thing I'm talking about. And this is a high-end deal. You know, we're talking about 2 mil here. And just explain this deal. This was a deal where it was six blocks.
No, this one here is a PPR.
Oh, that's a PPR.
And this is in northern suburbs of Sydney. And really, this deal didn't cost a lot to do because it has a... it was a home, it was on a corner, and it was a very beautiful home, and it was subdividable. So we approached the owner, and we said to the owner, rightio, you know, we can come in here, we can get approval for what's going on, and we'll sell sell individually, and you'll get, and then we'll get the property sold, you'll get your money of what you wanted, I'll get my money back that I've spent on the application for the approval, and then if we do the subdivision, we obviously need to get that back, and then after that, we split the costs after that. So I think we, at $13,000, I think is what we spent on getting the approval through council, and we actually got to the point where we were about to start the subdivision, and someone came along, a builder came along, and said, rightio, it's probably a good deal for me to do. So rather than us doing the deal and spending the money to do it, the builder bought it and we got paid out of the deal and we made some good money out of it.
What did you end up making on that one?
That one there, I think after cost back, it was probably 40 grand. If we did the subdivision, we might have made 70.
Okay.
And so he got his money plus his extra bit on top of that. So money in the bank is better than...
Absolutely.
Going through the hard part.
For 14 grand in outlay, how much time did it take you?
Oh, it literally took probably 7 or 8 hours of making phone calls and setting up.
So 7 or 8 hours for 40 grand?
Yeah.
That's not too bad. Your hourly rate on that's all right.
Yeah, I don't mind that hourly rate. So yes.
But see, that's the sort of thing that can be done. I mean, this was a seller. He's had a property on the market for a long period of time. If you were to buy that deal, do the subdivision, then on sell it, you got holding costs, you've got, you know, costs involved in DAs and subdivisions and possibly a build and time frames, and the money's, you know, it would be a lot less, and the risk associated with would be much greater because you've got all of the risk on you. Whereas this way, all you really risked was, 13 grand in application fees.
Hmm.
And, it made it more saleable. It moved on. He got a premium price for it, so you're probably a little bit generous in your negotiations there.
Well, and, you don't know what price I got him to, though.
And, everybody makes some money. He made more money. You made more money. Everybody makes more money.
Yeah.
This is the kind of stuff that I like, you know. And the more you throw into the one deal, the better it is. If it was a different place where you were renovating and then you were subdividing and then you were selling the land and you were, you know, all those strategies popped onto the one deal, you make more money. And you got to remember, guys, that, you know, you've been through a lot of education and, you know, every 2 weeks I'm here talking to you about, you know, the next thing and what you can do and how you can make that happen. And you start to assume that everybody knows what you know, but you don't, but they don't. And not everyone can do what you've done after you've been through boot camps and education programs and home study programs and reference materials and checklists and all the stuff that you guys have got at your disposal and the networking and all that stuff. You know, not everybody's got that. Not everyone's got that guide. Not everyone's got that ability to be able to just say, hey, how do I do this? Or even the thought process to go, oh, this is big enough to subdivide. You know, that kind of stuff. That makes the money. So you're actually doing the existing owner of the property a big, big favour by sharing the profit with them, sharing the love.
That's right. And look, a question about what do you do when it says price guide over a certain amount. What I like to do is I like to sit with the vendor and say, quite simply, you know, if someone walked through the door right now and offered you 1.8, that you would take it. And you know then by their reaction whether it's a yes or no.
So we're doing two things here. We're talking about where a seller is prepared to leave money in the deal. So they might be prepared to leave the 20% in, etc. And you go and borrow the rest from the bank, and then you pay them off over a period of time, the deposit basically. So you're getting into the deal with the vendor financing your deposit is really what we're talking about. And then on the other side, we were talking about doing a joint venture with the existing owner where you share in that particular profit. So let's just go through the vendor finance side of things and what that would mean.
So with the vendor financing you into the deal, you can use the vendor's money. So you could do an 80% loan and they give you a 20% loan. So bank holds you for 80% and then you're paying 20% of interest to the vendor. You could do a whole 100% with the vendor if they're in no need for the money, and you can show them that they will be, at the end of every week, they'll actually be much better off with you paying them interest than the bank paying the interest, because you're probably going to pay anywhere from 2 to 5% more interest than what the bank will pay them as savings. But to get into these deals, it's no money met down deal, except that you may need some hurt money in there. So you might need some stamp duties and legal. So in this finance to buy, we actually are changing titles. We are purchasing the property. And this is good plan if you're looking ahead and you think that the area might have a capital growth.
Or you can do something to it to make it worth more.
That's right. And we've had we've got definitely one of those that we're sitting on at the moment, where it's just a little bit pregnant is what it is. But we do realise that the property growth is going to grow a lot in the area. And so that's a good thing for us. So the types of deals you can do is you can ask for the 20% from the vendor and 80% from the bank. You can ask for 90% from the vendor and pay 10% down out of your savings. So that way, you know, the vendor's got some security in the property. It's a good way of being able to say to the vendor, you know, I wanted vendor finance you into this property. And if it's in a flat market and they don't want to do that, they may be scared that the property market's going to drop even further in that area. And so it's a good way to actually be able to, what do they call it when the vendors get beat up by the real estate agents? They are
conditioned down.
So you can actually condition the vendor down to a point where they're agreeing with, they're actually saying to you, I think the market's going to go down here. And so rather than, you could use vendor financing as a way to be able to get them down and then say, well, I'll just do a normal purchase. That's another strategy you can use. So if a vendor was to sell a property for $500,000, you'd pay $50,000 deposit if they, you know, so they'd give you a 90% loan. So if a vendor was to put $450,000 of that money into a bank at 4%, they get $18,000 per annum. But if they financed you into the property at 90% and you paid 7% interest, they get $31,500 per annum. So you can start to show the vendor that, look, it's not a standard deal and you may have to talk to my legal people, but in saying that, you're going to end up with another $12,000-$13,500 a year just in interest, because you're helping me to get into this deal. I'm helping you by paying you more money than what the bank will, and you're helping me out. So show them the money, show them what that's going to mean to them.
And don't talk percentages. Never talk percentages. Always work it out what it means in real dollars and talk real dollars.
Yeah. And with that there, you've always going to come up against the, yeah, but then I'm going to have to pay tax. And then just talk them through the whole fact that tax is inevitable regardless of what we do. So, and it has to be dollar figures. And if they say, oh, yeah, but I won't get my pension, you're going to have to do some research onto the pension and about tax and find out some information so that you can present to them and say, look, this is the information that I've found out about your pension and that you'll still get your pension with this extra money. How about you? I'll write it all down for you. You go and see your accountant and make sure what I'm saying is correct.
See, the silly thing is with the pension, and this is where people who have a very different mindset about, you know, the government owes them a favour and, you know, is relying on a pension when they retire, is that for every dollar that they make themselves, the pension only goes down by 50 cents. So they're actually 50 cents ahead every single dollar. But they just don't get it, that they're losing their pension.
Yeah, that's right. And so, and you know, there's a lot, the whole pension area will bring different information in from different sources, and you'll get crossed lines, and their kids will say, oh, yes, but they really need, you really need to be well advised or well researched yourself to be able to, because these sort of deals need you to be in a position where you know the whole story, where you can talk to them whenever they come up with a throw at you to try and shut you down. You need to be able to talk to them in a calm, collected way with the facts and say, yep, rightio, this is, I understand what you're saying, but my understanding is this, this, and this, and write it down for them, and then they can check. And then you say, just make sure you go and check with someone who is qualified to be able to give you that advice.
That's
so,
right.
And so, you know, like I said in the last time there, give them what extra money they're going to be coming in. There's plenty of websites that give you a way of being able to calculate pensions and different pieces of information from incomes, and you could have your computer there with them and fill it out in front of them.
No. But this is the kind of stuff that there is just so much out there. When you understand the story behind the deal, when you really get to know what makes people tick and what they actually want out of something, then it gives you an opportunity to be able to try and work through the maze, which often people can't see for themselves. This is where you're really trying to add those strategies into an existing property. You're not buying it. All you're doing is going along and saying to an existing owner of a property, have I got a deal for you?
Yeah.
And, you know, the deal can be everything from, you know, your house looks crap, let me clean up the garden. It's got no street appeal, it's run down, it's dirty, it's whatever, which is just a basic, you know, cosmetic makeover. And, you know, I've got students in, one comes to mind in Adelaide that does exactly that. He was a landscape gardener, and his business was doing all right, but it was just kind of poking along, and he needed some money, just come out of divorce. He needed some money to go into a deal. And didn't have any. So this was the quickest way for him to do things. He would find old properties or properties that were badly presented for sale. They were in, you know, they might be overgrown, they had bad street appeal, and, you know, he would use his expertise in cleaning up the garden, and he was a bit of a handyman, so he'd give things a bit of a gurney off and gurney off the roof and, you know, fix anything that was half falling off, like back doors and whatever else. And give it a jolly good clean, really, was all he was doing. Make it presentable. And then whatever profit they made over and above what they agreed on before he did any work, you know, there was the bottom line price that the current owner was prepared to accept. Then anything over and above that, they split the profits 50-50. And he was into properties. Oh, he typically made between 20 to 60 grand a throw. Now, there's only a few that he made up around the 60 grand a throw, because that meant that he was actually increasing the value of the property by $120,000. $60,000 went to him and $60,000 went to the existing owner. And imagine that on a property that, you know, it might have an overseas owner, it might be a distant owner, it might be just an owner that's got no idea. It could be an owner that's been left the property from, you know, Great Aunt Bertha's estate. And all he was doing was presenting the property so that it would sell at this maximum price. He shares in the uplift, because not everybody can do that stuff. So, you know, that's the type of stuff that can be done. And that's just one strategy. Imagine adding 2, 3, 4, 5 strategies on top of each other and what that will mean from a profit perspective. And there's no outlay or very little outlay. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to pay stamp duty. You don't have to do any of that stuff that costs money. You don't have to hold it. You don't have to pay interest on it while you're holding it and doing the deal. And, you know, it makes deals that wouldn't be profitable enough to do on your own, profitable to do because you don't have the transactional duties. See, just because Ian's talking about million-dollar deals here doesn't mean that that's the only place they exist. It, you know, they're there in a $100,000 deal, a $200,000 deal, a $500,000 deal. They're everywhere. And you just got to have that forethought, the ability to be able to see the potential, the ability to be able to do the feasibility and know the strategies behind the doing the actual deal. But this is the biggest opportunity that you guys are going to get through 2013. One I'm really excited about, because there is literally so many of these deals lying in every city, in every small town, anywhere you want to look, you guys can pick up these deals, and you don't need a lot of money to do them. This is the great thing. So I'm really excited for everybody, because it's something that everybody can do no matter where you live. You don't have to go to, oh, this is the new boom area, this is going to happen there, this is going to happen there. These things are everywhere at every price point.
Yeah, and the flip side of that is also that most people can't do a $2.5 million deal, but all we needed was $100,000 of equity to be able to get into this deal and do it. We had to back ourselves. We had to put, you know, what we would consider a risk on the line, but we were confident on what we could do here. And so would I, at 2.4, I wouldn't have purchased this deal.
Not, well, that's a lot of risk.
Well, that's right.
If it goes wrong, you're bankrupt.
That's right. So 100,000, it's going to hurt. If it goes pear-shaped, you're probably going to get most of that 100,000 back. You might do your work and not get a little bit of money back. But I don't think I would have done that deal unless I could have picked it up for 2 million and I could have got a vendor finance for him lending us the money. I don't think I would have done that deal.
No.
I wasn't at the stage of...
Well, I wouldn't let you. The money wasn't in it.
No, and I wasn't at the stage of investment where I could have afforded that deal as a straight purchase. But as a vendor JV,
yeah,
it was easy.
But just remember also that, you know, these prices are pretty big, but go back to the student of mine I was referring to earlier in Adelaide. You know, his outlay to do a landscaping and a bit of a fix-up on a house might be six grand, $6,000. And his upside is 20, 30, 40, 50 grand that he's making per deal. So that's not a lot of expenditure or risk money, if you want to call it, to back yourself to say, hey, this is, you know, it's working, and I'm spending six to potentially make 20, 30, 40, 50.
Yeah, the return.
That's a good return.
Yeah.
Especially when he knows what he does. You know, that's his job in this particular case.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, well, I guess that's given you some food for thought, and I hope you guys get out there and put it into place, because that's what it's all about. Get out there, put this education into place, get more education, get motivated, get with a bunch of like-minded people to make this happen, stay motivated, and jump onto www.iloverealestate.tv and stay connected. Bye for now, guys. I'll catch you next time.